hopefully you know. It's a great verse, by the way, to have memorized. If you don't have it memorized already, it's simple. It's easy to remember. It's Galatians 6:9. It just says, let us not grow weary in doing good, for at the proper time, if you do not give up, you will reap a harvest. Isn't that a beautiful verse? It's just packed full of good little truthlets. Do not grow weary in doing good. I think Paul probably said that because he knows it's tempting to grow weary in doing good. And then at the proper time, I call that the God clause, you know, in God's timing, if you don't give up, you will reap a harvest. It doesn't say what the harvest is. It could be a harvest in your own personal life. It could be a harvest in your relationships, in your family. It could be a harvest outside in other parts of the world. But if we don't give up. And I just want to tell you a couple of short stories of times where it was tempting for me to give up. And before I do this, because it's easy as a guest speaker to make yourself the hero of every story. And my wife often says that I do that. And I explain to her, honey, that's never true. And then she says, yes, it is. And then I say, no, it's not. Anyway, never mind. I mean, not that that would ever happen. Just theoretically speaking, it could happen like that. So I think it's important for you to know there's lots of times I have given up. I have something that I think God's called me to do that turns out to be really, really, really hard. I've stopped doing it. And it's always easy, I've found, at least for me, to justify reasons for why I would stop doing something. Nobody else is helping. There's often a team that starts a new ministry, and then you look around and wonder where the team all went, and it's just you. And you say, well, I mean, that obviously God wasn't in that. And then you stop. There's lots of reasons to quit on things, and I've done that myself many times, but sometimes I haven't. And when it comes to our work in the Middle East, we haven't given up. I went 20 years ago first when I was, when I was 20 years old, so that's more than 20 years ago, 36 years ago, I went first to the Middle East with a group called YWAM, Youth with a Mission, who sends young people out irresponsibly around the world to die. And that's pretty much what happened to me. They said, you should go to Yemen with the team. And once again, the team didn't really exist, so it was just me going from Holland to Yemen by myself. And they said, do you still want to go? And I didn't know any better, so I said, sure. You know, I'm 20 years old. When you're 20, isn't it amazing how much you know when you're 20? I knew almost everything. And so I thought, how hard can it be going to Yemen by myself? So I get on an airplane. We were in Holland. That's where the training school was. I flew from Amsterdam to Jordan, and then Jordan south to Yemen by myself. But I transited through Saudi Arabia, through Jeddah, Saudi Arabia, which is in a straight line pretty much from Amman down to Yemen is Jeddah, right there on the Red Sea coast. And I got off the airplane and was immediately escorted into a jail. And as I'm going to jail, I'm saying to the guy, why am I going to jail? He said, you have to have a transit visa. You don't have a transit visa. And so somebody hadn't thought of that, including me. And so the next thing I know, I'm in about a 20-foot by 20-foot airport jail cell with about 100 Bangladeshi refugees and me. And so there's 101 of us, and my flight was in 2 hours. I missed that flight. They took my passport, took my luggage, and I was in that jail for 3 days. And so I missed several flights, and I actually remember thinking to myself, okay, Carl, I should be godly, you know, a missionary. Maybe God's called me to pray for Saudi Arabia. So I mumbled some faithless prayers for Saudi Arabia, but mostly I was just mad. I was mad at God. You know, my prayers were mostly like, hello, God, you know, I'm doing this thing for you and this isn't working. You know, did you forget about me? Did you lose me on the airplane on the way to Yemen or what happened? I was frustrated. There's no cell phones. There's no way to communicate with anybody. There was some guy supposed to meet me in Yemen named Bruce. Turns out Bruce is actually from Australia. That's surprising. Named Bruce, and that's a Finding Dory joke or something. I don't know what that is. Or Finding Nemo. What's that? Anyway, everybody from Australia is named Bruce. And if you go to Australia, sure enough, there's lots of guys named Bruce. And there was a guy named Bruce supposed to meet me, but he didn't know where I was, and so he'd probably left. 3 days later, the captain of the airline that was flying us, Royal Jordanian Air, came in to the jail cell and somehow convinced them to let me go. I don't know what he said, what he did, but I was so thankful. I followed him out onto the plane, flew on down to Yemen, but I was 3 days late, so sure enough, Bruce isn't there. And classic, you know, that style of missionary work genre. There was no number, phone number. There was no last name. There was no address. There was no contact. So I sat in the Yemen airport for 2 days. Just sat there by myself. I hadn't eaten anything for 5 days now. I'd had water, but no food. And so I used to be skinny. And again, feeling kind of mad at God, feeling stupid myself, feeling upset with YWAM, feeling mad at now Saudi Arabia and Yemen for really no reason. But just, you know, I was upset. I was frustrated, confused, wondering what God was doing. And finally, a guy came in that looked like he could be a Bruce just because he wasn't brown-skinned. And I stood up and I said, "Bruce?" And he said, "Carl?" And I started just hugging him and crying. You know, it was pretty emotional to meet Bruce. And so he took me in, and promptly after about 3 days in Yemen, I was there for 3 months. I got the bad version of hepatitis and spent the rest of the 3 months sick in a hospital bed. And that's pretty much the end of the story. So there you go. I'm done. Is that okay? I just quit early? Isn't that a blessing? Isn't that an encouraging missionary story? And then, I don't know if you've noticed, but sometimes life works that way. And we don't always talk about it, do we? Especially the preacher guy from the front. It's tempting to make you think that our lives are all together because we tell the best of our stories, especially as a guest speaker. I can easily do it. I can tell you the best of my stories and walk away feeling pretty good about God and myself, frankly, and making you think that I must have some special connection to God. But most of what I've done in life hasn't actually worked. I mean, most of what I've even felt God's called me to do hasn't worked. I've tried my best. I've worked really hard. I've tried to be faithful, and I fail. I love the I don't know if you've ever seen this poster. There's a poster of Michael Jordan, the basketball player, that says how many shots he's missed, how many game-winning shots he's missed, how many times he's missed free throws. I mean, it goes on, this long, long list of Michael Jordan's failures, and that's the whole poster. It doesn't ever say, but he won 6, you know, NBA championships. And I think that's the truth of life. I came back from that experience back to the States, 21 years old, very mature and old, and I got involved as an intern pastor at a local church. Intern pastors just mean you work all the time for free, and was serving there, and they put me in charge of homeless ministry and prison ministry. I didn't know any homeless people or any prisoners, so that made a lot of sense. And we started a breakfast on Saturday morning where we'd feed pancakes, bacon, eggs to homeless people on the streets of Colorado Springs. There's like 40 or 50. There's not very many, but there are some. And I did that every Saturday morning for 8 years. Like literally every Saturday for 8 years with really no obvious fruit other than they had one, you know, nice home-cooked meal that my wife and I cooked, my fiance at the time and I cooked. And then I went to prison. The first time I went to the prison, the maximum security prison in Canyon City, Colorado, I was tricked by the chaplain who just said, "Come." And then I came, and then she, it was a lady, she said, and you're speaking. And I said, "Well, I'm only 22, and I've never preached before." She's like, "Oh, you'll do fine. Why don't you just tell your story of Yemen?" I said, "No, do you know my story of Yemen? There's like nothing good that happened. I just was sick for 3 months and then flew home." She's like, yeah, but I think that will bless people. And I don't know why, because it didn't. And I did tell it, and it didn't bless anybody. But the guy in the front row, he just sat there like this the whole time. He had biceps bigger than my legs, and he glared at me. And the whole sermon, he just went like this. And he was whispering, "I'm going to kill you." And so I'm just shaking. This is my first ever public speaking experience. It was horrible. And then I did that every Wednesday night for 8 years. Like, literally, I don't think we ever missed for 8 years. In fact, we started going to other prisons, and so we go sometimes 2 and 3 times a week. Now, I don't think really anybody would say that our homeless ministry or our prison ministry were great successes. It didn't feel like that. I don't think anybody would have said that. Fast forward it now. We've lived in the Middle East for most of our adult life, actually. Lived in Beirut for 12 years. We live in Dubai now. We upgraded. But our daughter, our oldest, went to university here and then has moved back to Beirut. She runs a business incubator that helps startups start up in Lebanon and doing great and doing ministry stuff with Syrian refugees and just thriving. And Chris and I, my wife and I, live in Dubai the last 3 years. But I've been in and out of the Middle East all of our lives. And we were in Dubai just this year. And in March, the former prime minister of Somalia, who is a friend of mine, came to visit. And he and his wife flew in. They just needed a break. You can imagine Somalia is not a great place, and Dubai is a bit better. And so they came over for 5 days, and it was the second day we were having lunch, and Ali looked across the table. He said, Carl, by the way, he was the prime minister of the whole country in the 90s. He now has started, kind of carved out a new state in the northern part of Somalia that he's declared himself the president of and formed a cabinet and a whole government. So not everybody in Somalia appreciates that, as you might guess, but he's trying to carve out a place that actually works. Somalia is infamous for, you know, El-Shabaab and for pirates and all things that are not very good. And now it's in the worst drought and the worst famine in the world, they say, in the last 50 years. It's really, really bad. Hasn't rained for 13 months. Hasn't rained a drop for 13 months. This was in March. And he said, would you come? Would you come visit me? And I said, would you have a lot of visitors there? And he said, nope, nobody ever. I said, like, nobody? He said, nope, I've never had one visitor from any country ever. He goes, you know, it's Somalia. You know, he goes, it's dangerous, so people don't come visit me. And I go, that sounds awesome, I'll come. And, my, you know, Chris is sitting there. He looked at Chris, he's like, he goes, is that okay? She goes, that's what he does. And anyway, I've just recently think that maybe she doesn't actually like me because she keeps telling me to go to places like Somalia. So it never dawned on me before. So I said, I'll come. And I got a couple friends that were smart enough, godly enough, dumb enough to come with me. So the four of us flew into Addis Ababa, the capital of Ethiopia, which is right next to Somalia, and we're going to fly in the next morning into Somalia on a private, you know, kind of a small 11, 12 passenger King Air 350, you know, twin prop, you know, kind of classic African bush plane. I mean, it's a great plane, and the Ethiopian captain was going to fly us in, land on a dirt airstrip. It's the only way you can get there. There's no other way. So that night, we're all sitting around talking with this captain who's going to fly us in the next morning at 10 o'clock, and his phone rings. He says, excuse me, comes back. He said, that was the assistant to the president of the neighboring state of Somalia called Puntland. And he said, if you fly in, he's going to shoot our plane down. So we're not going. And everybody's like, yeah, well, shoot. Yeah, obviously we're not going. And I said, no, we flew all the way here. We're going. And he goes, well, I'm not taking you, so you're not going. And there's no Uber Somalia, so which, you know, surprisingly, there's not. There's no bus. There's no cars. There's no way to go unless you fly in. And he's the only guy that does that. And I'm not going because they're going to shoot me down. And I said, and so I've just kind of learned, if you feel like God's call, if it's something good, and here's how you know if God's asking you to do it. If it's a good thing, if it's not sin, if it's not harmful to somebody, if it blesses your neighbor, if it loves your enemy, if it loves somebody, then maybe God has in fact called you to do it. And then just don't give up. Don't give up on that. If it's a difficult relationship, don't give up on that just because it's difficult. So I said, don't you know anybody who knows the president of Puntland and we could call him? He goes, what are you going to say to him? I said, I don't know. Let's just see if we can call him first and I'll think about it. And so he goes, oh, actually, my best friend Hersey's wife is good friends with the president's wife. So he calls him real quick. And I'm not kidding. 5 minutes later, his phone rings and it was the president of Puntland. The captain of the airline of the little airplane goes, hello? And then he just went, oh, wait a minute. And he hands me the phone. And I said, hello, this is Carl Medeiros, who is this? And he said his name. I'm the president of Puntland. I know who you are. And if you fly in tomorrow morning at 10 o'clock, we're going to shoot your plane down. And I was trying to think, so what do you say? What's the answer to that? I mean, so I go, well, what I actually said was I prefer that you didn't do that. But, you know, one thing we could do is, I'm going, okay, God, this is a good time to, like, give me a thought that would, you know, make sense. I said, what if we come to where you are first and have breakfast, and if you like us, you let us go, and if you don't like us, then, I mean, just let us go back to Ethiopia, don't do something else, but we'll just go back home. So I said that, and then I covered the phone while I'm talking to him, and I said to the airplane pilot, I go, by the way, can you fly us to Puntland? I don't even know where Puntland is. He goes, yes, it'll cost an extra $3,000, but I'll fly you there. And so I said, okay, we can do it if you can do it, and the guy goes, okay. I said, how about, we're leaving here at 10, so how about like 11? He goes, that's 2 hours, 12. How about 12? Okay, 12. And that was it. I hung up, and everybody's like, oh my goodness, now we're going to Puntland first? So we did. We flew in the next day, landed on a dirt strip. His whole army was there to welcome us. And he had these two tables with these funny little paper tablecloths on top of them with some food. We got out to the plane. We sat down, had a late breakfast, brunch, I guess, Somali brunch at noon. And about a half hour into it, he said to me, "Mr. Carl, tell me," oh, by the way, he grew up in Buffalo, New York. So we're speaking English. So I said, "Go Bills." And he said, "By the way, tell me exactly, why are you going to visit Ali in Khatamo?" He said, "You know that nobody likes him." I said, "Yeah, I'm picking that up." He said, "Why exactly?" He kept saying exactly, "Are you going to visit him?" I said, "Exactly? Well, it's because we're followers of Jesus, and we think we'll meet Jesus there. That's exactly why we're going." And he went like this. He leaned back, he looked up, and he went, "You know, I'm a believer too. You guys better get out of here. Get going right now. Get going." And I have no idea what he meant by "I'm a believer too. I don't know. I don't want to ask." And he said, go. So we ran back to the plane. We took off and we landed in Khatamo, where my friend Ali is the president of, the former prime minister of the whole country. And he took us right from the airport to, his army was waiting for us there also to greet us. It always feels so comforting to have guys with machine guns and bandoliers and, you know, everybody has an AK-47 there to protect you. You never know if you're being protected or kidnapped. But anyway, we went to the water well, the one water well. By the way, good for you for doing water wells. You cannot imagine what a fresh water well does to a population. You actually can't imagine. As an American who's used to turning on the tap and drinking water, although doing that here, it doesn't taste the same as it does in Colorado. But never mind. Generally speaking, turn on the water tap and you can drink it, right? When you don't have that, you actually can't imagine how bad that is. And you bringing water to communities changes the whole community. I mean, literally changes the community. So we went to the one water well for 1 million people. On the way to the water well, there were dead camels, there were carcasses of animals. Ali was telling us 2, 3, 4 people die every day, usually standing at the water well waiting for water. We got there were thousands, maybe 2,000 people waiting there because they heard their president was coming. They heard that there were some Americans coming. We got there. He announced something in a loud voice in Somali. I speak Arabic, but not Somali. And he said something to everybody in Somali. Everybody clapped, looked at me. I thought, you know, they're saying, "Thank you for coming." So I was like, you know, "You're welcome." And then Ali goes, "Carl, I just told them that you're a sheikh." You know, a sheikh is the, like Steve is a pastor, so it could be Sheikh Shore. No. So he said, I said, Sheikh Carl is now going to pray for rain. And I said, What? Wait, no. What, you just said that? He goes, "Oh, yes. And they're all looking at me like, "Okay, let's go." And I said, "No, I don't. I've never done that before. I don't even know how you do that. I mean, I was thinking, I don't know a rain dance. I don't know the rain prayer. I don't know which prayer that is." And I looked up. There's no clouds. And I said, "When was the last time it rained?" He said, 13 months and 3 days ago. Not a drop. And the land is parched. You can't do it. Not like West Texas dry land. It's like parched land where there's huge cracks in the ground. The cracks are as big as the pieces of dirt because there's just nothing to hold it together anymore. And there's nothing living. There's no vegetation, nothing green anywhere, and everything's dying. There's cholera, malaria, typhoid. It's horrible. The one little makeshift hospital had one, when we went there, had one IV bag. They were literally sharing the IV bag and sharing the needle between patients. It was the worst thing I've ever seen. I've been to Syria, Iraq, Yemen, all over the world, bad places. There was nothing like this. And then he said, "I was going to pray for rain." I said, "Is rain forecasted?" Like, I was hoping that maybe if I prayed, then it was going to already rain, you know? He's like, "Well, no, but," and you know what he did? He leans over, right there in front of everybody. He hugged me, you know, from the side. He said, "Don't worry." He whispered into my ear. He said, "Don't worry, Carl. I believe." I'm thinking, oh. So the Christian missionary doesn't have any faith, and the Muslim president has that. That's messed up. So anyway, I did. I prayed. And it was a really bad prayer. You know, if you ever prayed bad prayers, and you know when you're praying it, that it's like a really bad, wimpy prayer. You know that because you usually say, "If it be your will," a lot in the prayer, because you're thinking if it doesn't happen, then you blame it on God. So I prayed one of those kind of, I mean, again, we're being honest here. We're having a conversation. That's what I did. I said, "You know, if it be your will," it probably isn't, you know, but, you know, let it rain. And obviously it's not going to, but I mean, that'd be great because if nothing else, I'm going to look really stupid. They'll probably kill me if it doesn't rain. So it'd be great for that not to happen. And I mean, it was like a selfish, wimpy, stupid prayer. And I closed with, "In Jesus' name, amen," to kind of cover it all and make sure it maybe had a chance to work. And he translated the whole thing line by line as I prayed it. And I got done, everybody claps real loud, looks up, and they all raise their hands and say, Inshallah, Inshallah, which, you know, in Arabic means God willing, God willing. And I'm thinking, oh my goodness, please God, you know, do something, that'd be great if it, I mean, but, and that was it. And that night it poured rain. It actually rained the rest of the time that we were there. In fact, it rained so much that they were starting to worry about floods. It actually stopped raining the day before all the streets and houses would have flooded. People started coming to the house where we were staying and lining up outside for us to pray for them. They said, we want Sheikh Carl to, because he obviously has a lot of faith. I'm thinking, oh God, you rescued me. this had nothing to do with me. This shows that there's a God. And it rained and rained and rained and rained. And so many good things have happened. We're now sending doctors to Somalia. We're doing Skype calls with doctors to help them know what they're doing there. Amazing things are happening. Actually, the president of Puntland and my friend Ali have met now 2 times. The guy that wanted to shoot down our airplane, have met now 2 times because we met. And I don't know if you know that you did this or not. I don't know how things work here with money, but you guys were the church that supported all this work more than anybody else. So thank you. I mean, what you've done, isn't it fun? You're part of that story, and you didn't even know the story. Isn't that just the coolest thing? And then finally, I want to say, when I go to Saudi Arabia now, in fact, when I was there last time, literally, I was met on the tarmac by the chief of staff of the Crown Prince of Saudi Arabia, and I was escorted off the plane in a different way than I was escorted off the plane when I was 20 years old and taken to his home, and we spent the whole night, literally the whole night, talking about Jesus. And when I go there now, to Saudi Arabia, I go there several times a year. I'm a guest of the royal family, and they only want to talk. We have to talk politics a little bit because it's the Middle East. That's how you always start every conversation. No such thing as not talking politics and polite company with Middle Easterners. So you start with politics, and then right away, not religion, they want to talk about Jesus. And we talk, when I was there 2 months ago, we talked late into the night with the top leaders of the country about who Jesus was and what the Bible talks about him. Why was he crucified, and what does that mean, and what is the resurrection, and what does it mean to have life in Jesus? One of them says, I heard the word born again. He said, remember Jimmy Carter? I go, yeah, I remember Jimmy Carter. He goes, he said that word. Is that from him? It's actually in the Bible. He was like quoting the Bible. What does that mean? Isn't that cool? The son of the current Crown Prince of Saudi Arabia asked me that question. Can you explain to me what it means to be born again? I don't understand it, to be born again. See, I think when we don't give up, when we just have just enough perseverance, just enough forbearance, just enough fortitude, which are fruit that the Holy Spirit gives us when we give our lives to Jesus, to keep saying yes and to not stop, God does incredible things. I don't know that you'll be going to Somalia soon or even Saudi Arabia, but all of us have a Yemen and a Saudi Arabia and a Somalia in our life. And I think God's asking us not to give up. Can I pray for you? So Father, I pray that you would do that. You would empower us by your Holy Spirit to not quit. When there's a relationship that's tough, when there's a thing you've asked us to do that isn't going that well, I mean, you still love us if we stop. You still love us when we give up. You still love us exactly the same when we quit. But I know in order to bear much fruit, not giving up is always the wise choice. And so I pray for this kind of perseverance and stick-to-itiveness for my friends here in Midland at this church, that you would supply them all the passion and desire to keep going. And it's in your name, Jesus, I pray. Amen.